closer.
You're listening to
The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time. The Antioch Podcast.
The Antioch Podcast is a ministry of Preach System.
Oh, I got Jesus, yay.
Hello, welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. Once in a while, the Antioch Podcast gets to take our show on the road, and this month, four of us had the privilege of speaking as a team at Calvin University for their annual Unlearn Week, a week dedicated to unlearning stereotypes, biases, and racism. This speaking series, which is open to the public and staff, is a place for students to voluntarily attend a whole host of lectures, interactive seminars, and other learning opportunities to help them grow in their understanding as people made in the image of God, understanding other people who look, think, and act very differently from themselves, who are similarly made in the very same image of God. This lecture series has been going on at Calvin for several decades now, and the Antioch Podcast is pleased to be invited back year after year as a welcome guest. This year, our team came to talk about a question we get asked a lot. That question is, how do you all manage to talk about racism so much and still stay friends? We thought we would like to jump on the opportunity to take this hour to talk about that with you all. Let's go now and listen to this conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unlearn Week. This is Friday of Unlearn Week. There has been a lot that's going on. And we represent two-thirds of the Antioch Podcast, and we are going to do a live podcast for you, and you actually get to see us. You're going to be the other third of our podcast, except you don't have a mic. but we will have some time for a Q&A afterwards to ask some questions. So if you don't mind, we're going to just get started in the way that we usually do, and you just get to watch this special edition of the Antioch Podcast, all right? All right, here we go. Well, welcome back to the Antioch Podcast, where we have conversations about biblical anti-racism. Today is going to be a little extra special because we are actually going to be recording live today and in person. And we actually have an audience today.
Yes. This will be really good.
So we're super excited about this. And so we are grateful to Calvin University and particularly the Center for Intercultural Student Development because they have been hosting a series called Unlearn Week, and Unlearn Week is all about finding out information and tools and increasing our awareness and knowledge and skills to undo, unlearn biases, stereotypes, and racism. So we are a part of that conversation. We're grateful for the invitation, and we're grateful for this week of learning that this is the 22nd year of doing that kind of work here at Calvin University. So we are super grateful for that. And we might talk about it a little bit later, but we're going to get started. Now, as you know, the way that we usually introduce ourselves is that we say who we are, our racial ethnic identity, so our listeners will know who is sitting around the table. And then we have the question of the day. I'm so excited for the question of the day. Because I suggested it. So I'm going to get us started. So hello, my name is Michelle, and I identify as an African-American woman. And the question of the day is, what is your favorite pumpkin-flavored thing? Because it's October. Mm. And I struggled with this one after I proposed the question, and then you said, oh, yeah, that would be really good. I struggled with it because I realized that most of the things that are pumpkin are not really pumpkin for me. They're sweet potatoes. So,
so you pose a question.
I pose the question, and then I'm struggling with it. But I think on the way over, I think I finally came up with something that was really pumpkin. And that was pumpkins stuffed raviolis.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That does sound good.
Savory pumpkin and kind of sage thing. Yeah. That's because you don't buy vegan stuff.
But I'm going to look now.
Yeah. Now look for it. So that's what I'm going to say, and I'm going to stick to it. So, Eric, how about you?
Hi, my name's Eric. I identify as a white man. And when I saw the question come up yesterday, I'm not going to lie, I went on the internet. And I'll throw out two things, then I'll tell you what my real answer is. So there are some very strange things that are pumpkin spiced. And did you know that there is pumpkin spiced deodorant for men?
No.
You could have kept that to yourself.
Yeah, I know. I just kind of, when I was looking, I was like,
I'm okay.
When I was trying to think, what is my favorite pumpkin spice thing? I was like, nah, that shouldn't be a thing. And there's also pumpkin.
You might smell yummy, though. I'm just saying.
But why would you want to?
No. You have a point here, because actually not so much the pumpkin, but scents and smells like spices like cinnamon and nutmeg. Mm-hmm. It's actually like an aphrodisiac. Yep. Just saying.
We're gonna just move right past that.
That's exactly.
He's married. I am. He's married. He can do that. Okay.
They also have pumpkin spice ramen noodles, which I was a little surprised by. But my favorite, I'm gonna go with stereotypes. So, pumpkin spice lattes. And I am the white guy, so I can say that. So, and that is it.
Okay, so. You can do that. All right.
All right, so I'm Susie Dixon. I am Puerto Rican and Italian, and I'm a woman. My favorite pumpkin-tasting thing, and now that you've said spice things, I thought it was a pumpkin cake with the cream cheese frosting on it, and the cake has to be nice and smooth. So, yeah, that's what I like.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
And now I got to go find it somewhere. Yeah.
All right. My name is Jane Bruin, and I am a Pakistani Punjabi American woman. And I feel like I shouldn't have gone last because I have an unpopular opinion about pumpkin spice. I think in my mind there's a difference between pumpkin spice, which is nutmeg and cinnamon, and actual pumpkin, because there's no pumpkin in like a pumpkin latte. I don't taste any actual pumpkin. And like a very, there's a whole thing that I'm not going to go into. So my only thing that I like that's pumpkin flavored is pumpkin. Oh. And it's pumpkin stew, like savory pumpkin and beef stew.
Well,
we could do it with tofu, and we could do it with just pumpkin too.
Just pumpkin.
Yeah.
That works.
So you're saying your favorite pumpkin flavored thing is pumpkin.
And it's the only pumpkin flavored thing that there is.
That's good.
Now that we have had our icebreaker question, we're going to get to the topic that is at hand. And so we have been recording weekly, well, if you don't count the first kind of start, but definitely since the pandemic, we have been recording weekly, and we are in episodes that are in the 200s now, which is pretty good. And we have a pretty good listenership, yes. Especially for a podcast that is on a conversations about biblical anti-racism. In fact, we've been rated as one of the top 50 podcasts that is on this conversation of race and racism. So that is exciting. So what we're going to talk about today is, what is it like to be friends? Because we often say on this podcast that we are a group of friends who get together every Friday afternoon, to have a conversation, we press record, and then a podcast happened. But what is it actually like? We've talked about it from time to time, mm-hmm. but what is it like to be friends, good friends, to actually have conversations about racism and anti-racism and our lives as well? Because if you're not a regular listener to the podcast, we have some pretty deep conversations about anti-racism and the experiences of it. So what's it like? I will start. What is it like? I think one of the things that it's like for me as I think about it, it's like family. It's like family on a personal level because, I mean, we ask these introductory questions really so we can get to know each other a little bit and to know each other in a way that's different than just talking about race, because no one wants to be that friend that the only thing you talk about is race. We want to talk about life together, and we share life together. We were just, before we started, sharing baby pictures, right, with one another. So we share life together. But as any functioning family, we're not going to talk about a dysfunctional family, but like any functional family, sometimes every now and then there's some differences of opinion. Mm-hmm. And there's some things that we have to say, what did you mean by that? Or is this what you mean? And that's okay. Mm-hmm. If your family is absolutely perfect and you never have any disagreements and there's never these moments where you're like, what does she mean by that? What did he mean by that? Your family needs help because you're not being honest about how you're feeling. And so it has been a journey to create enough trust mm-hmm. in this yeah. group so that we can actually share what's on our heart without fear of, well, what is Susie going to think if I say this? What is Eric going to say if I say this? Is Jane going to like me anymore? Is she going to look sideways at me as we're walking past each other on campus? So we've been very intentional about trying to create space so that we can say what we're really feeling and not having to wear a mask to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And we're all still on this journey ourselves. No one has arrived. I know I haven't arrived at getting it right all the time. And so that's what I would say, that this is like a functional family. 99% of the time, it is roses and root beer. Yes, I had to think of the appropriate drink for the location. It is roses and root beer, and we get along well. Every now and then, something pops up, like every blue moon, something pops up, but it's okay. I think it's a sign of a healthy team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I think that every time we share vulnerably with each other and we're accepted, it's like a deposit of trust and it is built between us, right? And I love how you guys call this Unlearn Week, because we are on the journey of unlearning things, right? So every time we get together, there is something that we've learned about ourselves and something that maybe we're not really proud of, right? And so to be able to come together and say, all right, this is where I'm at. And then to be able to hold each other in that space, that's rare. That's rare, because nobody's trying to fix me. Nobody's trying to...
And we're not calling each other out, right?
No,
so I don't want anyone to think like, oh, I need to listen to the podcast because they're calling each other out. We're not calling each other out. We're encouraging each other on in our own self-learning, right? So there is opportunity for us to think about, well, where am I? And I think our approach is, because I know everyone, and I think, and I'm growing in my learning and understanding of each other, and if I can trust, which I do, that they have the best intentions, they are well-meaning, that they're striving to do the work, I can extend grace for why someone has said something, if I'm receiving it in a particular way that strikes me a little wonky, that means I need to unpack, why am I feeling that way?
Yeah,
because it's because we're together. Why am I feeling this way? And if I need help in unpacking, why am I feeling this way? Then we have conversation. That just means the next time we record, we say, hey, can we talk about this? And if it's something bigger than, hey, pre-recording conversation, we try to schedule a time where we can get together. I can tell you with six different people, with six different schedules.
It's hard.
It's hard, but we've got it on there. It's like, hey, we need to get together because we need to be in person. We need to have some pumpkin stew without the beef in it. We need to have the pumpkin cake. We even need the pumpkin spice lattes so that we can just get together. And we do like to cook.
That's true.
We do like to cook and share food with one another. So that's one of the ways in which we work through things as well.
So one of the things that you might miss if you're a listener, and I would encourage you, if you are not a listener, so we have our QR codes in the lobby, like zap those and be a listener. Because what you're seeing today, you're getting one level of depth, but listening on a regular basis will give you a different level of depth to hearing how these conversations happen on an ongoing basis. We get together for 2 hours every week. One of those hours is our recording. And I want you to know that that's the background, because what we're doing is we're investing one of those hours in relationship building. And we're not like saying like, oh, and here is our hour of relationship building, guys. Let's sit down and let's invest in one another's relationships. Like we're not being, you know, dogmatic about that. What we do is we're like, oh, how are you? You know, like what's going on? We're just catching up, which is investing in relationships. And then after we get done, a lot of times we're like, oh, hey, here's this thing. Like, I didn't know how to ask this when we were talking. You know, how would, you know, and sometimes those are the ideas for the next podcast, is that we're actually trying out questions with one another. That's a place where we're practicing being vulnerable with one another and figuring out how do we ask a vulnerable question in real time where the mic isn't on, and we hold each other's vulnerabilities in that space, and we're trying out ideas, and we're like, yeah, that's a good idea. Or like, there's really something there. I think we've all said that to each other. Like, that's something, you know. The episode that released this week, that Jane, you're on there. Like, that was one that, like, Susie, you and I were like, Jane, you need to talk about that. And so we literally like hit record right then. Jane, talk about that. Talk about what you do for a job. And you went for an hour.
Yep.
And it was amazing.
And that was the first time I got to really hear like what she does instead of just what she thinks. So
yeah, so that's growing up the way that I did, which some of that is on the podcast episodes. Being my authentic self is a hard thing for me, like having spaces where I can be my full American and Punjabi and African self. We didn't talk about that part, but anyway, my full self. And so it is really nice that we build relationships. We ask each other questions. We have a group text that I think every day we're on the group text, right? At least once a day. And it's just really helpful to have people that you can feel the trust is there, and then you can just say what you're thinking. And when you're doing anti-racism work, you know, you're thinking about like, is this a trigger? Is this a microaggression? And you do want to think about those things. But at the same time, if you have a question, I like to have a group of people that are not like me, that maybe think like me and maybe don't, but aren't like my same cultural background, that I can say, what do you think about this? Or how do you feel about this thing? So that podcast that we were, the one that just dropped, we were actually not scheduled to record. And we just started talking. We were just going to talk about something. And we started talking. And then as I'm talking, they're like, wait, stop. We're going to record this. And that is, it's just so nice to be able to like just share your heart with people that you trust. And feel free to be like, I might not know this perfectly. I'm going to share. And even sometimes when we think, we assume that we're all on the same page about something. So I'm thinking about that episode that we did on communion. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And like that, I think the idea was, you know, communion is a place that everyone is like an inclusive thing, and it's where everyone like it levels the playing field. And you know, if someone said that to me, I would be like, yeah. And then I got to thinking about my experiences, and I'm like, actually, I've experienced it in ways that it hasn't been. And what spurred me on was like another member of the podcast talked about her experiences with communion. And it was like, so even when we don't agree, it's like, wow, light bulb moment. I didn't even ever think about it like that. And we do have a lot of moments where we're like, I thank you because I just never thought about it that way.
I think that's one of the gifts of this podcast for me and for listeners as well, is that we are different people. We are not all the same person. So it's not like there's one person and everybody else is a clone of that one person and that one idea. I think sometimes it might sound kind of like the same idea because we're all passionate about this work, but we come to it differently. We've all had different life experiences, and yet we have created a safe place for people to share what those experiences are and say, well, I experienced that a little bit differently. And that's a really, that is such a valuable gift, and it has taken time to build that up.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, you had the mic.
We're also really polite to each other.
Well, maybe that's actually one of the things, though, is that we do make space for one another and give each other space. I think one of the things that helps too is that we talk about being anti-racism educators and friends, and so I think one of the things that each of us brings to the table is that we're all invested in doing our own work as well. Mm-hmm. And so our starting point is that we've all done a lot of work prior to coming to the table. Mm-hmm. And so while we are benefiting from hearing one another's stories and those teach us, this isn't, we're not starting at the beginning of the Monopoly board either. Right. And so we've all done a lot of work and continue to invest in doing work on ourselves and aren't relying on the other members of the team to be our teachers in that work. And so sometimes that means, like, for me as a white guy, I'll speak just for myself, that might mean that I go and I need to do some extra reading, or I'm going to go learn about something. Somebody will say a story. I'm like, oh, wow, that was it. I never thought about it like that. And then the next thought is, I need to learn more about that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go learn some more about that, because there's a lot of things I don't know. Even if I am an anti-racism educator, like, there's a lot of stuff I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, being Puerto Rican, I always learn a little bit more about the island that my ancestors came from whenever there's a hurricane or there's a problem, right? And I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that about Puerto Rico. And so there's always stuff that we don't know. And sometimes we need a place to process that, right? Yeah. Because without certain information, sometimes we sound like we know what we're talking about, but we don't really understand the depths of it. So the more we are learning about the topics we're teaching or about the relationships we're in, about each other, the more we need to actually process that together, because like you guys were saying, there are connection points. There are points of, oh, I'm so glad you put that into words. I didn't even know that there were words for that.
Susie, I'm so glad you said that, because as anti-racism educators and doing other types of diversity work, as facilitators, we're often pouring into other people and we're helping other people to process, but we often are not able to process, do our own processing with other people. Or when we're teaching, right? I'm not doing my own processing with other people.
That's true.
I don't want to scare them on all the things that are going on in my head and emotions, because I'm trying to create a safe space for other people. And this, to be able to process with others in a safe place where we know we're not going to be judged, to be able to be our full authentic self. So we don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to get it right. We don't even have to know what we're going to do with it. But to be able to have a place to just, I need to say this. I need to say how this feels, or to not say. That's the other gift that this team offers to one another, is that sometimes when we get together, we all log on and then someone says, I just can't today.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that's important.
Let's talk about the self-care a second, because that, okay, so if you're listening, you might not know that's happening. That's a regular practice on our team. So there's six of us. The way it's been, we have two white co-hosts. We have two folks that are like middle voices and two African-American co-hosts. And so full team is six of us. And you might hear four people some weeks, or three, or five.
Or two.
Or one. A couple times it's been one. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. But sometimes it's because we get together, and during that first few minutes, people say, like, I just needed to hear you guys' voices today, but I got stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And our team, I don't remember how it started, but we just kind of decided that, like, it's more important that you're a member of the team, but you don't have to do, like, performative work on this team. You get to be a person, and you can record when you have energy for that. And this should be life-giving and not something that you do because you feel you have to. And so you record when you want to. And that's been our practice. And so when people aren't there, a lot of times that's because you need to be taking care of yourself or being given permission to invest in yourself. And that we oftentimes, before the recording happens, are blessing that person to do it. So they're hearing from us, seeing us say, that's what you need to do today, and that is okay. And I think a lot of us need that reminder from people that, like, it is okay. It is very okay to take care of yourself. Because that's not a message we get in the world a lot, is that it's okay. And to show up and have someone say, it is okay to take care of yourself today. Well, good.
Yeah. Especially as anti-racist educators.
Yeah, right? And sometimes people have sat, like a number of us have, like, sat on where we're like, we might show up for the opening question, and then we go on mute.
Yes.
And we just want to listen. And that's okay.
And that's okay.
It's like sitting in the back row of church, you know, and you're just like, I'm here.
I just need to be here.
Today I need to be a listener. And that's all right. You do what you got to do. I'm going to wrap up. Sorry.
No. I got sick a month ago and I couldn't talk. But I wanted to be there. So I'm like, okay, here's my answer to my opening question, and I'm just going to sit here and listen.
Yeah, she would write something in the chat.
We would read it.
You said something that really clicked in my head, where you said you're a person first. We treat each other like people first. And when you do this work, and if you are a non-majority person that does this work, you get put on every committee and you get asked to be on every team. And it's often about like what you can do, like how you are doing something and what you can do. And, you know, you're the resource person for a lot of things. And sometimes for me personally, those lines get blurred in my own head about like my worth as a child of God and and the person that he created me. So I get this like pattern of like, I always need to be doing something and I need to be doing this because this is what my worth comes in. Mm-hmm. And so then like, if I'm in just a relationship with someone or with a group of people, like I turn on my educator hat and I'm like the resource person for this and the resource person in spaces that not necessarily should I be. And what I love about this group is that we just get to be people. Like, we don't look at each other and be like, you're the resource person and you speak for this group of people. Like, we are in the work together. And if there's a moment where we're just exhausted or we are like, hey, I have the opportunity to like spend the day with my friends in the pool, I don't get any judgment from people to be like, you should be doing this work because people are dying or whatever it is. It's like, be blessed to go do that. You need to take care of yourself. And I like, that's just such freedom. And it feels like real friendship that way.
As you were talking, I was thinking, I really love to listen to each one of you, right? I want to hear what you're thinking, what you're processing. So it's not just us sharing, it's us receiving yes. each other and holding each other. And I love that. Mm-hmm.
We talk together a lot. We're learning from each other a lot. Is there something that you have learned about yourself in the process because we have been on this journey together, or something that has enhanced your understanding of doing this anti-racism work while on this journey? I'll give you all a moment to think about it. So I'll start off because since we're recording live and we don't have the benefit of editing.
Maybe you can later.
But so anyway, but here we go. One of the things that I learned, and I recently did an episode on this where I shared lessons that I have learned from being on the podcast. And one of the things, it was a really humbling thing to learn, was how there had not been a lot of middle voices in my life before being on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being fully transparent, I had put white people in two boxes, right? Okay. So while I'm kind and can work and yes, do a training, but there are these kind of very limited boxes, mostly for self-protection, because I didn't want to put myself in a position where I would get hurt or be exhausted or be mad. So let me just put white people in. And it was really being on this podcast that really started, that one revealed to me these boxes that I had and kind of peeled back the layers. And I could say, oh, wait a minute. There are white people that aren't toxic to be around, right? There are white people that don't just need something either need something from me or need me to be a champion or need me to hold their hand in doing something or need me to be a voice. There are just some white people that just want to be friends. That I say that with a lot of like, ooh, really, Michelle, that's true about yourself? But it really was. And to really take time to listen in relationship to what we call middle voices, as opposed to, oh, we're bringing this speaker in and they're doing their thing and then they go away. And then we listen, we bring in this person, they give their story, and then they go away. That's not relationship. But when you're actually in relationship with people, intentional relationship where you're getting to know them and you're listening to them and we're being intentional about talking about race, because some of you might have multicultural, intercultural relationships, but I would ask you, how often do you talk about race deeply and how you're feeling about race deeply? It's good to have a best friend that doesn't look like you, but how often do you talk about those things? For gender differences, how often do you talk about if you identify as a cisgender female and you're in conversation with a cisgender male, how often do you really talk about the differences on how you navigate your life as male and female? And if you're really daring, you're in conversation with someone who does not identify mm-hmm. as cisgender, mm-hmm. and you're having a conversation about what is it like, what is the difference for the way that they're navigating their life, not sitting in judgment, but just really wanting to know. And you're able to share where you stumble, and there's no judgment. How often do we make space to do that? And hear this, this doesn't mean that now you go find someone and say, hey, Stacia, tell me what it's like to be a white woman, right? No, no, we don't do that. And Stacia's not gonna run up to me and say, Michelle, tell me what it's like to be a black woman. No, even though we have relationship, there's more trust, there is more kind of hanging out that we need to get together, to get to that. We're probably, our level of conversation is probably at the middle of the iceberg, right? We're past the top of the iceberg. But to really be our full selves, that takes being together consistently, right? And I think that's what makes our podcast work. I really do.
I'm so glad you said that, because it was in conversation first with Eric, because it was because of Eric I came on, that I learned that because I wasn't white and I wasn't black, and that I was a middle voice, and I had something worthy to say, and people might want to listen to it, right? And so it was actually on the podcast where I started feeling more comfortable with my voice and examining what my relationships have been with both black people, white people, and then everyone else, right? So then the podcast time became that place for us to think together and not be judged and say, you know, now that rings a bell. Remember this thing that happened, and I never thought about it through this lens before. So it helps us to bring some stuff out so that then there's more space for the new things that are coming up.
Jane or Eric, what learnings, one or two learnings that you've had since being on the podcast?
Yeah, I think I always know this, but it just is in such a deeper way, is that there's just multiple layers to every issue, right? And it's just nice to be in a space where you can, people can easily like peel back those layers. And so there's not always like one nuance. There's multiple layers of nuance to everything. And it's really important to give people space to work through those nuances. Not everything is like so cut and dry. That's one thing. And the other thing is that it's really important to take care of yourself. If you want to have any type of longevity. And I'm sitting next to a person who has worked at Calvin for 39 and a half years and has been here for longer than that because you attended here too and has done the work. And it's not always easy work. Mm-hmm. But so I am just... sorry, I don't mean to single you out here. But,
I was about to single you out. So yeah, we're good.
But you know, I was really excited when Eric asked me to be part of the podcast, is because I had been admiring Michelle from afar, and like I'm always like, how does she do this? Like we work together, but like I'm always like, how does she like do this for so long? And now I'm like getting to learn that firsthand. And a lot of it is about self care and boundaries and filling yourself up, and that's been just. I don't think you realize how much, but it's been a huge blessing.
Thank you.
I've
had to learn
beautiful.
It the hard way. I've had to
this
learn.
Is real time.
See me crying.
And I've had to learn that a hard way, and it's how I was going to put you on blast.
Now,
is that one of the things that I have appreciated, right? Again, as I said, it's Jane and I worked together at the university. As soon as she got here, I knew who she was, and we've been on committees together, we've done programs together, but I really didn't know her. And it was actually in really spending time that I really got to hear her voice, not the Calvin voice, right? Because there's a role that we do, and so there is a perspective, there is a presentation that we're going to do. There's a lot of the way we are presenting is a Calvin narrative. And there are some connections with the Calvin narrative and the way that we see the world, but there is also a part of us that is not a Calvin narrative. And we choose not to put that in front because there is this bigger arc of work that we're trying to do. At least for me, I understand that this, my narrative that is not 100% aligned with Calvin would be more, would get in the way of Calvin doing its work, right? Because Calvin is on a track. More days than not, it feels like it's the right track. It's a long journey. It's a long game. I get that. So I don't want to do anything that's going to derail it. Because I, especially sitting in the position that I am in, I've got a 30,000 foot view of what's going on. Not just how I feel about what's going on, but what's going on, what the denomination, what the people in Pella, Iowa, what the people in New York, what the people all over the place is thinking about Calvin. So I'm trying to navigate a space to make sure we can continue doing our best work. And so it's only been since we've been able to be on the podcast that I think Jane and I even knew that we could trust each other with this other conversation that we can't present here at Calvin, right? So it's like, I think I have a greater appreciation for the work that you do, have grown in that because I've gotten to know you. I mean, you do great work. I don't know what our BIPOC and international students would do if you were not here. I don't know how they would be able to flourish and to function. So I have that great appreciation. I mean, my son was here and benefited from you, right? So... But there's this other part that we, in the busyness, in the day-to-day work, in the professionalism, that there's not always opportunity just to press pause and say, can we just talk? Can we just talk off the record? Can we just take off our name badge and not be our position and just talk? And that's one of the benefits of this, is that because we do this so frequently, we do this every week, because we've been doing this so long, episode 200-something, mm-hmm. we've shared life together and given each other space to share.
Can I just say one thing? That part of my learning curve has been learning about the CRC world and the Calvin world, because that's not my world. And so listening to how they're processing, it's like, oh, okay, now I understand why this happened or this didn't happen. Or so it. So for me, it's I'm learning another culture. I'm learning another way of doing, of living in this very systemic world.
In some ways, I feel like the podcast is sort of like a laboratory.
Yes, that's a good word. That's a good word. Sometimes we say therapy, but I think laboratory is good.
Okay. Well, yeah, we've talked about it being therapy, and I am a therapist, yes. So I kind of love that we feel that way a little bit. But for me, the laboratory metaphor is, and maybe this is me in my whiteness, that like it's hard to see racism when you've been raised not to see racism, and like that whole colorblind mentality that like you're acculturated not to see. And then someone's like, there it is. And you're like, yeah, really? Really? I thought that, oh, no. And you have all the excuses that's like your mental playbook that you go by. And you have to kind of like learn how to not do the playbook. Yeah. But it's kind of still there. And it floods in without you wanting to. And to try to unlearn, you know, but you have to work really hard at it. And then even, you know, if you're really good at it, you're still kind of like it's an elective class, and then there are people that grow up in America and they have like a PhD in understanding racism just by growing up here and not being white. You know, and us white folks, it's like it's an elective class, like you wanted to learn about it, right? So for me it's like a laboratory, and it's clarifying, like coming into a place in being able to talk with people that know way more about racism by living in it all the time, every day, who are really smart, and talking about it. For me, it's been clarifying, but it's also the thing that I think has impacted my life is it's helped me to be brave. To move from kind of like a posture of hand-wringing, where I'm like, oh, racism is bad. I don't know what I should do about that. I don't know if I could do anything. To feeling like, I think there's something I could do. And I've got friends that would probably tell me if this is going sideways. And then to try something. And I'm not going to share details. But when it caused pain, that you guys were there, and that we all kind of know each other's pain stories. And we won't share those details publicly, but that like we know that about each other.
And that's one of the things that as you just said, right? Being in conversation and relationship with people who might have a PhD in racism, or at least having a different understanding. What has been helpful to have you on the podcast and the other white co-hosts or white guests is to be able to hear white pain, right? Because that's not something that I often get to see. I more often see white anger, white indifference. White people will say, oh yeah, that's a good thing, or tell me about your pain, but not willing to share their pain, right? And so to be able to be in conversation and relationship and to see how racism, as you're striving to be an ally and co-conspirator, and others are striving to be an ally and co-conspirator, can see firsthand how racism hurts them as well. That has been a, oh, okay. And that's what has helped to create more trust as well. It's like, okay, they're not just trying to put a Band-Aid when I get hurt. They're getting hurt too. Not that I want anyone to get hurt or wounded in the process, but there's just something about knowing and understanding. Wait a minute.
He gets it.
He gets it. He gets it.
And you do. You do get it sometimes. I mean, you know.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. And I don't think I get it all the time. Like, that's the other thing is that, like, I think when you're white, you get your moment once in a while where it's like, I see it. Oh, and then the moment passed. And then, and I see that too. Like, where I was like, I had it for a second.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty Christian, actually, is that, like, racism's sin. Mm-hmm. And I can work really hard not to sin. Yeah. And I'm still going to be a sinner.
Saying that, unless you were just going to jump in, I wonder, why do we say conversations about biblical anti-racism? Why do we say biblical anti-racism and not just anti-racism?
That's a good question.
I can start.
Yes, start. I think that might be good because I don't know that we've. I think sometimes we have defined it, but it might be helpful just to say, what do we mean by biblical anti-racism? Why are we intentional about saying biblical anti-racism as opposed to just anti-racism?
That's a good point. And I think when I started, we were using Jamar Tisby's Color of Compromise book, and there's the church. You know, he talks about the church's complicity. He talks about how the Bible was used as a source of power, how it was misused. And so that was very important for us to talk about. And, you know, as we've continued, we are growing, mm-hmm. right? And we are stretching. So that's actually a really good question. Mm-hmm. It might be time for us to have another conversation about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one is to signal that we firmly believe that conversations about anti-racism belong in the church.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
As opposed to this is something that is outside of the church. And in recent years, you pick the year to go back to, but in recent years, there's been this movement to say conversations about anti-racism, diversity, all that stuff is just woke stuff and it doesn't belong in the church. And we're signaling, oh no, we can have conversations about anti-racism because we're Christians and because our faith is grounded in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so these are biblical anti-racism. We're signaling that conversations belong in the church. It is not outside of the church. It is grounded in the church. That's for me why I think that's important.
Yeah. And I think if we change our name, it doesn't mean that, or our whatever you call that, our subtitle,
tagline.
It doesn't mean we're not going to talk about the Bible because the Bible is filled with injustice. Mm-hmm. It is filled with people thinking that they are superior to another, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are stories, those are examples that we can go back and learn from with a new lens. And hopefully it could be something that then we can really talk about together.
Yeah.
Like, where did we go wrong? Why didn't, you know, why can't we have this conversation here in church on a Sunday or wherever?
Yeah. And since the long arc of the story of the Bible is both redemption and reconciliation, that's what this anti-racism work is all about. Getting to the root of the problem so we can be positioned to really be family and reconciled and restored and redeemed.
Bible, one of the major themes in Scripture is justice. Mm-hmm. And so here's something that I'll just throw out for fun. In white churches, historically and now, we as white folks tend to skip over the parts in Scripture about justice. In fact, most of us don't read the prophets, except for the parts where it talks about Christmas is coming. when we read Isaiah, the only part of Isaiah we're really familiar with is the part where they talk about, well, Isaiah talked about Jesus is coming. And that's kind of like the story we tell ourselves about what the Old Testament prophets are. But let's think about like how much of Scripture is the Old Testament prophets. It's like a third to a quarter. And what were those prophets talking about? Well, if we read those prophets, and let's say that we preached on those prophets about as much as they fill up the Bible, we'd get a third to a quarter of our sermons talking about what were those prophets talking about. Well, they're talking about injustice because Israel and Judah's gone off the rails. They are not following God's law. They weren't following the Torah. They were doing horrible things to poor people. They weren't worshiping God. They were committing acts of injustice left and right, all over the place. The same kind of things that we're doing now. Keeping poor people down. Doing it generationally. Making sure that those things pass forward. In America, the way that we perpetuate injustice a lot of times has a definite racial angle. So if you say, oh, anti-racism, that's wokeism. Okay, so are you saying that racism? I mean, what is the opposite of anti-racism? It's racism. Right? Is that biblical? Well, everybody says, oh, no, it's not. Okay. So racism, you'd say, oh, I want to be non-racist. Okay. So that's saying like the status quo. Well, is the status quo? That's like injustice as it exists right now. So is injustice as it exists right now, is that biblical? Is that the world that God wants us to live in, the way that injustice is right now? Well, no. Oh, okay. So then we want to be against injustice, like racial injustice, right? That's anti-racism.
But we want to keep the Bible all nice and, you know, neat.
Yeah,
right?
The Bible.
We don't about the good stuff.
The Bible
stuff,
talks about
the
sin.
Things that make us feel good.
Well, we don't even really talk about sin, but, you know. This has been rich conversation. And again, I've already got some more future podcast ideas coming out of this. I think we're going to have to return to this conversation about what is biblical anti-racism. And then I think there's some more storytelling from us about us and how we continue on this team together. And if you have been listening and something has struck a chord, we pray that you would sit with that for a while. If you have some questions, it's like, hey, could you talk more about this? Send us an email. You know how to get a hold of us because the link is in the show notes. Like, subscribe, send this to somebody and say, hey, you got to see this thing, hear this thing. It's really cool. But until then, we want to encourage you to keep the faith and keep fighting for justice. This has been the Antioch Podcast. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. You can help us by spreading the word about the Antioch Podcast by sharing this episode on your favorite social media platform and by leaving us a review on our Facebook page or Apple Podcasts. Your shares and reviews really help us reach more people with the message of biblical anti-racism. Thanks.